Hello and welcome back to the Web Canopy Studio Show. I'm your host, Tom Andrews, and today we are joined by Elliot Sitkins, who is here to talk about email marketing. Buckle up and let's begin. Hey, and welcome back to the show. Elliot Sitkins here on your first podcast on the Web Canopy Studio Show, or at least your first one with me, and very, very excited podcast today because Elliot is a genius here at Web Canopy Studio, super smart guy, and we are talking about email marketing. Before we talk about that, Elliot, do you want to just give a brief introduction about yourself?
Yeah, like you said, my name is Elliot Sitkins. I am a strategist here at Web Canopy Studio. Work on the execution of a lot of back-end campaigns. Of course, a lot of that revolves around email as digital marketers, whether it's the main thing or just something we do in the background for, you know, re-engagement, delivering assets, those kind of things. You know, everyone loves an exciting email nurture campaign, but they are effective.
They certainly are. And as part of your role as a strategist, you do work on various things. Can you just explain, if listeners are thinking, email, it's that's so 2010, why should they focus on email and put the time into mastering it?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, everyone still uses email. Of course, you know, everyone talks about the last thing you want is another email in your inbox. You know, there's email fatigue. And yes, those are all things to keep in mind and be conscious of when you're working on your email strategy. But at the end of the day, everyone that works online has an email address and they check their email regularly. And so if you're using it effectively, it's really one of the best ways to get in touch with your audience. You know, even if you have the best offer in the world, people still need to see it. And you can work on SEO, you can work on things on your website, but sometimes there's nothing better than just sending it right to them.
Absolutely. And I also feel that it's more bottom of funnel than things like social and blogs as well. It feels more personal. And when somebody actually goes into their inbox, whether it's Gmail or whatever inbox service they use, they're actually in more of a buyer's frame of mind. Whereas if they see your post on Instagram, there probably aren't many people that are thinking, oh, I want the what B2B offer I can book a call for today. So yeah, like you say, email is super, super important. Let's talk about some general email marketing best practices, because yes, it's kind of how long is a piece of string, because there are different kinds of emails you can write and different tactics and strategies do all work. But there are some best practices. So do you just want to talk about some of those?
Yeah, absolutely. So like we were saying, there are some downsides to email marketing when it's not done properly. But I think when it's done properly, it can be very effective. I think one of the biggest things is to email like a person. I know that sounds pretty obvious, but with the exception of very, very few brands that have, you know, a ton of brand equity, no one wants to hear from a company. They want to hear from a person. And so treating your emails like a person, you know, especially now with so much AI content out there, it even sounds a little bit robotic, people are going to ignore it completely. So seem personal, seem relatable, you know, be friendly as much as your particular industry and brand voice allow it, you know, have a little fun, be relatable. I think that's really the biggest thing, is just be conversational. Don't be the least bit spammy. And make sure you're providing value is the other big thing. You know, it's managing that equity. If you build up equity, the more value you provide your reader. And then at some point you do need to ask for something in return, ask for them to take some kind of action. And so just finding that right amount of balance of providing value and asking.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it, talking about the equity, almost like a piggy bank, if that's what you call them in America.
Yep.
So
exactly.
You deposit that money, and then when you've deposited enough, you can then take it out and have that big payday. But if you get greedy and try and have that big payday before depositing enough, then you're sort of going to fall a little bit flat on your face.
Yeah. And that goes right into the other thing I was going to mention too, with email health, of like keeping your email healthy, because you know, there's no way to guarantee that an email is going to end up in a primary inbox, but the healthier your email sending domain, the less likely you are to go to spam or to go to promotions, folders, and things along those lines. And so, you know, the more you wear out your audience, the more likely you're to get unsubscribes, you're going to get lower open rates, all those things are going to hurt your email health. So making sure to keep track of your email health and keeping it healthy is going to be a lot better for deliverability and effectiveness.
That's super cool. And again, various ways. And I know when it comes to deliverability, a lot of people think they know what they're talking about, but the rules and the gateposts seem to shift all the time. But are there any absolute do's and don'ts when it comes to email health, just to give you the best chance possible of staying out of the spam and even the promotion folder?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing, especially for spam, is just to avoid, if you're if you would ignore your email, probably don't send it, kind of those things. If it looks like it could be a scam. So, avoid big like free in the subject line, even if it is a free offer, generally try to avoid some of those kind of words. Don't make it sound too good to be true. Obviously there's a lot of softwares out there that can help, like HubSpot that we use, that will help you monitor your email health and give you recommendations on things you can do. Obviously, personalization to a certain extent is going to help with open rate. Don't overexhaust your email audience. Don't send them way too many emails way too often. If people get unengaged, then stop sending them emails. And then, of course, just the regulation things, like make sure there's an unsubscribe link in your emails and those little details as well.
In terms of length, have you noticed length plays, well, A, have you noticed it plays a factor in whether something goes to the promotion folder or not? And B, just for general email marketing purposes, let's just assume it's going into your primary inbox and somebody's opened it. How long do you generally recommend an email should be? Or does it completely, in your mind, depend on the offer or whereabouts in the life cycle somebody is when reading your email? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not sure I've noticed a big difference in length on deliverability, but again, that's really hard to tell, from the person sending. You can tell if the email got delivered or not, but it's hard to know where it ended up, whether it was in a primary inbox, in a promotions folder, or whatnot. But as far as length, yes, it definitely depends on, the purpose of the email, the life cycle stage of that. But generally, I think shorter is almost always better. I think people have so much to say, and I'm sure it's all good things, but I think it's way too easy to write way too long of an email, and it's much better to be concise. Like we said, people do get a ton of emails. The second you open an email, especially if it's one you weren't expecting, if it goes beyond, the top half of your screen, you're probably ignoring that. So I think the key is say just enough to get them interested, and also keep in mind that extremely rarely, probably never, are you actually converting in the email directly. You're usually asking them to book a call, email you back, go to a link, and convert on a landing page. So all you need to do in the email is get them to take the next step. That's all you're selling is the next step. And so sometimes less is more in that, A, they'll actually read the email, but also if you leave them wanting a little bit more, then maybe they're going to go to the landing page and see what's there, and then you can try to convince get them to convert there, or they'll book a call because they want to find out more. If you tell them everything right in that email, maybe they, think it's not quite for them, when if you could get them on a call, you can convince them that this actually is the answer they've been looking for.
And that's crucial because the amount of people I speak to, or you not even speak to, the amount of emails I've seen in my own inbox where they try and sell their service or their product right up front. And like you said, you're busy. Unless it's somebody in the more online marketing world you maybe look up to as a guru, and then maybe those sort of people you are willing to read a slightly longer message. But if it's just a B2B service, for example, you don't really have any real affinity towards the person sending that email. So when you see their name or the subject line, yeah, okay, you might open it. But it's highly unlikely if you're out with your friends at a bar that you're going to think, oh, look, like Tom Andrews and Elliot Sitkins have just emailed me to talk about this new service they've got. See you later, guys. I'll speak to you in 60 seconds. No, you might just go to the toilet quickly on the way back, open your email. See the subject line, all that looks interesting. And then if it's like very short and sharp, these are the benefits, this is what you're going to get, then you might think, okay, I'll maybe click to the landing page and come back to that later. Or let's say you're not at a bar situation, you're just at home, you might click and then hopefully buy or book a call now. So in terms of the copywriting side of things, we've spoken about the length and given some general like overview tips, should we say, about the copywriting. Are there any specific tactics that you would recommend when actually writing an email Would you like, generally, do you like to write from a person, as in I, or do you like to write from the company, as in we? I have my thoughts on this, but curious to hear yours.
Yeah, I definitely always lean towards writing from the person as much as possible. You know, like I said, trying to be relatable and sounding like a person. Obviously, there's certain transactional type emails, I guess you could say, where you can write from the company. Like if someone's downloaded a free resource, you can, you know, if you're delivering that resource, just, hey, thanks from the team, you know, those sorts of things. But yeah, any marketing emails, I definitely try to be from a person as much as possible, and then if possible, make that reply to address the person that you're emailing from. I think that makes it much more relatable. And then, you know, when you have call to actions, if you can make it instead of saying, you know, book a demo or buy now, something that sounds more, you know, absolute or more, there's more pressure on it, make it more casual and just say, hey, let's book some time and talk. You know, I'd love to hear about your issues. You know, make it just sound like a conversation, because realistically, most of the time you aren't going to book that demo right away, or you aren't going to try to sell on that first call. It's going to be a discovery call. You're going to want to learn more, hear more about their issues, so you can craft a better demo and sales presentation. So go ahead and, you know, be transparent about that. Just say, I want to hear more about your issues. I want to see if we can be a solution for your, you know, for whatever problems you're facing.
And in the email itself, how many calls to action would you generally recommend within the email? And have you noticed that putting too many calls to action can actually trigger the spam filters?
Yeah, absolutely. Too many links can often be a bad thing. I'll often link the same resource a couple of times just to make sure they don't miss it, you know, usually towards the top of the email and towards the bottom. But the key is you should only be linking to one resource. Again, very few exceptions. You might want to link to give them multiple options, but generally you want to have one clear call to action, because even just two or three different options can lead to decision overload. You know, when you're trying to make a snap decision, someone spending 30 seconds reading an email, it's not a, you know, highly intensive thought process for them. You want to give them one clear option, give them a yes or no. They're much more likely to convert. If you give them three options, you know, I don't know which one I want to do right now, they're just going to leave and never come back to the email. So yeah, you could link it a couple different times, if especially if it's a slightly longer email, but make sure it's one clear call to action per email, one definitive action you want them to take. Make it easy to say yes.
I've seen this quite a lot lately, again, with in the guru space with people selling courses. I'm not a massive fan of that space, but I follow some people in it anyway. And a few of those recently have started putting in more calls to action. And I'm like, no, that's just stupid. That's not gonna work. And they do it because they think, oh, well, not everybody might like this offer, but if I put in three different offers, I'm gonna have a bigger net. But what you said there was spot on. And if you think about it, I'm sure everybody listening to this has been in a similar situation where you're at a restaurant and maybe you're looking at the dessert menu and there's loads of desserts there and you're thinking, oh, that looks good, or fancy ice cream, oh, but the cheesecake looks really good. Oh, but then, oh, like the crumble, or whatever you call apple crumble over there, that looks really good. And then you start going back and forth in your own mind and eventually you think, do I actually need anything? Like, do I actually need dessert? Whereas if you can just make it a yes or no decision, you're more likely to get it. So if ice cream was the only thing, then the question becomes, do I want dessert? And at that moment in time, you're like, yes, I do. I'll have ice cream. So you're absolutely spot on that information overload and decision fatigue is a real thing. And that
I
is,
think,
in my opinion, the biggest mistake I see companies make in emails.
yeah, I think that's a very good analogy for that. I haven't thought of that one, but 'cause yeah, and I think like even myself, I fall guilty to like when I'm writing an email, I'll often think like, maybe this call to action's a little more aggressive. Why don't we, you know, then after we say schedule some time with me, then you can say, or you know, if you don't want to do that yet, you know, check out this free resource, or you try to offer something like that seems like a smaller ask. But when you do that, it's then like best case scenario, they're going to say, oh, I can do something that requires less effort. I'm just going to take that action. That's going to pull people away from the action you really want them to take. Or worst case scenario, it's going to lead to decision overload. They're not going to take any action. You know, so often you want to do that because you're like, well, you know, I'm going to get a better click rate, but really then they're going to be clicking on something you didn't want them to in the first place.
That's a great
So
point.
yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Something I've actually never thought of. But yeah, that is super. I think as well, when it comes to newsletters, this is the only situation where maybe I would recommend having multiple links if it is just a typical newsletter where it's okay, this is what we've done this month, we've done this, and it'll say a little section of what you've done, and then maybe a call to action relating to that, and then it will maybe be talking about something else, and it will link to another blog post, and then maybe a little advertisement or a sponsor, and then it will link to that. That for me is the only kind of email. You might even disagree with that, but that is the only kind of email where having more than one call to action and link, that is acceptable. But in most
I
emails
think
that you're going to be sending like daily or every other day or weekly, whenever, I'd probably stay clear.
I think that is a fair point for sure. And I think it also brings into the discussion of like stylized emails versus non-stylized emails. I think that's kind of similar to, where it's like obviously if you're an e-commerce company that's just sending like a marketing blast that's this highly stylized email and you're like, it's spring season, buy our button-up short sleeve shirts or our shorts or our swim trunks, that can be different. I completely side tangent. I think a lot of e-commerce companies do way too much email marketing and, they're just stuck in everyone's promotions folder. No one ever reads it. But obviously we deal more with B2B. And I think that, there is still a time for those newsletters, those monthly or quarterly updates or whatever that are these nice stylized emails that maybe have a few different links to them. But if you're sending, a conversion focused marketing email with one clear offer because you've got a new event coming or you've got a new product that you're trying to launch, those don't need to be as stylized because you want them to feel more personal, and those should just have one clear call to action.
And I would say as well that even though I've just said that about newsletters, personally, if I had to just choose one style of email, I would never even bother sending a newsletter. I think the more personal emails are generally packed way more punch and generally way more effective. I think people send newsletters because they've become more popular over the last couple of years. There's more, I won't say who, but there's a popular podcast out there who, like, one of the hosts built their entire business on a newsletter, and I think a lot of people are just like, oh, newsletters, they're really cool. And they do have their benefits. But if you're thinking, ah, newsletter versus a more personal looking email, I'd go for the personal looking email every time. Just quickly, in terms of design, where you said that you don't want too many images, do you think you should have any images at all in most emails, or would you just go plain text? Obviously, you use HTML for tracking purposes, but would you make it look like a plain text email?
Yeah, generally speaking, I would go with plain text. Again, obviously, like if it's e-commerce, you need to show a product, go ahead and include an image there. And I think that there is a case to be made for, breaking the cycle and trying to be different. If you want to include like a GIF or a short video or a funny, like a meme, in the right context, of course, I think there's a case to be made for that to break the cycle. But just as far as like, let's be honest, do you really need your company logo at the top of an email that, of every email? Again, sometimes branding is important, but sometimes it's almost more valuable just to appear more like a one-to-one email, when possible.
Fantastic. Well, I know you've got a meeting in 1 minute's time, so I'll let you go. But listeners, don't worry, you will have more of Elliot Sitkins very soon, because next time Elliot's on, we are going to be talking about making the most out of HubSpot with your email marketing. So that is going to be a fantastic episode. And when you combine that with the tactics we've gone over today, then wow, you have some very good results to look forward to. So, Elliot, thanks a lot, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Tom.